Blog Talk Radio.
Python Radio. Tonight, it's me and Owen, and we're talking about... We're talking about eggs and the taking care of eggs and egg binding and all that kind of stuff. And one of the problems that
the
I went through...
What the hell are you laughing at?
Well, as I was trying to touch the button to get the show going live... Zach's like, I see a finger come out beside the thing here because, Zach Baez is here taking pictures at the Morelia Python compound. I was waiting for you to make fun of me, Owen, but yeah.
I can't let that one slide.
You can't let that slide.
You mean your apartment in Northeast, right?
Exactly.
That thing there, that's the compound.
One day it'll be
the
compound. Don't worry. But anyway... Okay, yeah, I forgot to yell out the, we're brought to you by MorelliaPythons.com. I'm all screwed up. I'm not used to having people here. It's almost like
Zach,
performing.
Zach, get the hell out of there. Tell Zach to go back in the room with the snakes and not come out till we're done.
Yeah, now he's gone.
God damn
okay.
it.
So, yeah, we're brought to you by Morelia Python's forum. That's MorelliaPythons.com, the best carpet python forum on the web. We are also proud to sponsor the ICAS. That is the International Collective Arboreal Symposium, and
Which is awesome.
Oh yeah, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. You can go over there and check out all the info at www.arboreal-symposium.com. So
we are the official radio show of the symposium.
Yes, which is awesome.
Yeah, we're the only ones allowed.
Well. I guess since we are Morelia Python Radio, it only makes sense, right? So,
of course.
But, yeah, and we are only weeks away from the carpet.
Be still my beating heart. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Northeast Carpet Fest is May 18th, which is just a few weeks away. And looks like it's going to be one hell of an event. So if you were on the fence about going, you definitely should come out and hang out with us. We want to give a shout out to Mr. Howard Redding of Redding Reptile Breeders for hosting the event.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be a good time. We got an auction going with all the proceeds going to Rico Walder. And we're going directly to him that day to help him out. And it should be a good thing. There's a lot of cool shit going to be there, man.
It's a great thing. I mean, first off, the food that's coming looks amazing. The company is going to be amazing. And then some of the things on the auction block, it's freaking stellar. I mean, I'm donating a caramel. Aussie Addiction is donating an inland. Julie's bringing rough scales. You're bringing a zebra jag. I still have no idea what some of the other people are going to come up with. Like, I don't know what Jason's going to come up with. I don't know what Howard's going to bring. I know Howard's auctioning himself. All right, that's one of the minor items that we're going to,
Cool.
I'm not sure how I'm going to pitch that one. Anyway, it's going to be a great, great time. And I've been talking to a few people who are newbies to come into Carpet Fest, and they are very, very excited. Some people were even talking about having to travel by bus just to make sure they get there.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. And I definitely can't wait. I have that entire week off because I have a wedding that I have to go to in Maryland the next day. So it's just going to be, you know, Owen doesn't have to be anywhere.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
I have to show up at a church tomorrow, God knows when, and I don't really need to be in great condition to show up to it. So, yeah, it'll be fine. And then the next day, I don't need to be back in Pennsylvania until Thursday. So it's okay.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yep.
Cool stuff.
So, and then I'm thinking about bringing Sophie to just kind of let her cruise around so that all you people can get the hint of what a, you know, monster coastal is supposed to look like. So.
Yeah, maybe I should bring that jag as well, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's definitely not something that's from...
Well, I don't know. If he tries to breed Sophie, you and I are going to have issues.
Yeah, that's true.
So, either way. It'll be a fun time. I definitely can't wait for it.
Yeah. So you can check out, I guess the best way to get all the info, up-to-date info, is to go over to the Facebook page, Northeast Carpet Fest, over on Facebook. And just send me a link that you want to become a member, and I'll prove you right up, and we'll be good to go. Don't forget the one in the Northwest, they're good to go as well. And I believe theirs is, again, I always screw this up, but it's June 8th.
I think that's what we've been saying. Whether it's the truth or not, we have no idea. But yeah. I think that's what we've been consistently saying.
I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, I got it right. June 8th, Seattle, Washington.
Oh, good job.
So if you if you're heading out there or have any interest at all in attending that event, you want to contact Heather, email her at nwheather7@yahoo.com. So there you go. That's what is going on as far as sponsors and such. In the news part of it, I don't know if you saw the post today, but the albino scrub, did you see it?
We have a news part?
Yeah, you know, where we talk about what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I apologize. The albino king horneye.
Yes.
See, now that would have been special, but you and I were tossing around that picture about a year ago between each other with a, don't tell anybody that we have this, that we know that this thing is in existence. So, you know, it would have been way more of a, ooh, if we, you know, if I hadn't already experienced that. But it's definitely a gorgeous animal, and that is the picture of the animal that you and I saw, that you sent me a while ago, but I would love to see more pictures of it because, in my opinion, just a one-and-done picture of the animal isn't good enough for me. I want more. I want to know what it is. I want to know all the little – I want to see it in action. I want to see it with other animals. I want to be – you know, if it's breeding, dear Lord, if it's breeding, just show me that and babies.
Yeah,
so
apparently
we'll –
apparently, from what I heard, it's a female and it hasn't bred yet. So, I guess if it was a male, it would have been going a lot sooner. But
right,
the fact that it's a female
takes
a little longer. So
yeah, I mean, when you produce that morph, that you really like. I have the Carmel Tiger downstairs, and I'm like going to pop it, and I'm like, please God, please God, please God, let it be a boy. No, girl. I mean, like, that just ruins the entire. Well, it's going to take 4 years for the project to advance anymore. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Now we wait.
The other cool thing that I saw was I'm just in love with these as the hypobretel. And Nick Mutton from Inland Reptiles, he posted up his pic of like an updated pick. Man, that thing
is
phenomenal.
That's a ridiculous amount of red. That is a ridiculous color on that animal. So, yeah, the hypobretals are going to be awesome. And I would love to see, I hate to say it, but it's like I would love to see what the hypobretal can do. I didn't say it yet.
Don't do it.
I didn't say it. I'm not going to say, like, cross the jag, because that's sacrilege. I'm going to say, like, the stonewash. Okay? I would love to see how the hypo acts with other brettle more.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going there.
I would never say how it would go with jag. Even though I know there's someone who's listening to my voice right now who possibly thinks that it would look awesome.
Yeah, did
and
you
very
see?
Well, could. I'm just not going to say it.
I don't know if I was just looking through some of the pictures, but if you look at the diamond brettle jags, there's a picture on Facebook. I want to say it's by Morelia AC, and it has all the different flavors of brettle jags.
Thing, yeah,
pretty cool.
Very
I mean, some of the four there's the picture with number four and number five. With those two, I could see why you would do it, but some of the, like, number two, to me, I don't understand because I have red jag that looks better than that. You know, Luke makes red jag that look better than number one.
Right.
Number three just looks like a caramel jag to me. I think it kind of has that resemblance of Echo on the saddles, but...
With the definitive lines of the saddles, which, you can get that, which is... Why I never understood why people breed jag to jag to get the, you're like, oh, it gets better jags. I'm like, I don't believe you, because I've seen stellar jags that I know don't come from a jag to jag pairing. And somebody out there has a pairing of a tiger jag to a tiger jag, and I'm like, well, more power to you, but your babies are going to be corkscrewing their way through their cage. I'm just going to tell you that right now. It's just not going to be fun.
So you think that if you're breeding a jag to a jag, the tendency for the neuro issue is
increased?
Increased.
Well, yeah. You know, think about it this way: we all say that the jag, the neuro, is in every single jaguar carpet python, and that it is you see it acted up when the animal's under stress or when it has a genetic predisposition. Corkscrewy males and corkscrewy females have corkscrewy babies, but, you know, only when they're stressed and unhappy. Now, if you get a double dose of jag on each side, I fully believe that some tiger jags, I think, have worse neuro than normal jaguars. And then I think mixing tiger jag to tiger jag or jag to jag, you're getting more of an instance with the getting more neuro mixed in there. You're definitely going to have twirly babies.
Huh. Interesting. I have the tiger jag from Jason Balin in 2009, and he did tiger jag to tiger jag, and that's probably one of my most stable jags.
I thought you said it was a tiger jag sip to tiger jag sip. Or was it a tiger jag to a tiger jag
no,
sip?
No, That's a whole nother
straight up tiger jag to tiger jag.
Yeah.
I guess you either proved me wrong or just got lucky.
I don't know. Just I think it just is. I can understand what you're saying and where you're coming from because you would think that you're making it more jaggy, so to speak.
But then also the other thing is that every animal is different.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, you have, like, every egg has a chance of being something completely different when it comes to genetics-wise. I mean, like, dude, at any instance, I could hatch out just from a normal pairing something completely insane.
Yeah.
So the genetic stuff's there, and every egg has the potential of being something crazy or brand new. So I guess every jag has the instance of having neuro or not, or at least not, like, visual. Like, they don't show it up too much.
Right.
And everybody's already established every freaking jag has it. So.
Yeah, I had jags that didn't show up for a long while. And then all of a sudden I had jags that just, they went totally loopy. You know what's a crazy one? My zebra jag. The one that's bred for me for 3 years in a row now.
Just went loopy?
No, he's always been a little loopy.
Nah.
you know, it's just one of those things. But he eats great. He breeds fine. I got babies from him fine. You know, it's just, I don't know. It's just one of those things, you know. You get
like I told you, Talon never went loopy until the first time I put him in with a girl, and then he totally lost his brain.
Well, then he recovered,
right? And he's bred several times with girls after that. And since I've and when I put him in with girls nowadays, he doesn't go loopy. He doesn't freak out. He's totally okay with it. But that first interaction with a female, he went totally ape. So, and it just happens, you know. We forgive them for that.
Yep. He's still cool. I still dig him. So,
speaking of news, you know what else is good? Ollie had that Paradox albino hatch out.
Yes, that was on my list as well. Cool.
Yeah.
I'm very interested to see what happens with that. So,
I would love to see how that progresses. I mean, like, you know, Will Bird had those Paradox albino ball pythons. And through line breeding, he got a lot more of the Paradox part to show up. So these things are basically like albinos that look like they've been like splattered with some black paint. So it looks really kind of cool, you know. And I would love to see that with the albino carpet pythons, just to kind of get that a new strain of albino cropping up. And who wouldn't love, like, this is what I love about the carpet python in general. We now have Paradox albinos. It is now there. Through some line breeding, we're going to get better Paradox albinos. And it's only a matter of time before the Paradox albino is mixed into other morphs. You could have a Paradox albino jag. What the hell is that going to look like? Who knows? You can have a Paradox albino zebra. It might look really badass. So, of course, this is awesome that we have this new color, and now it's got to make its way through all the different morphs. So.
Now, the only thing with the Paradox, though, like if you take the same idea, like I'm assuming that you can blanket across python genetics in general, but like the Paradox, oh man, maybe I hope I can get this right, but let me try to dumb it down. I know that Nick Mutton had talked about chimeraism, I think it is.
Right. The chimeraism is what we had with, you know, that pinkish albino thing that we got. That was technically two babies mushed into one. It's two separate embryos that formed in the same body, and most of them are sterile. With the Paradox albino, it could be that it could be two things. It could be the same thing. It could be a chimera. Or what it could be and what it is in the ball python is that the gene for albinism isn't working the correct way. So it's an albino, but it's not a full albino. Something got cocked up when it came to color and pattern. So it didn't really come all the way out as a true albino.
Huh. Yeah,
it's
still
recessive, but it's a completely different line is from what I've read. So,
from what I understood, that I didn't think that it was a gene that could be reproduced. I thought it was like one of those ones that
once in one time things. But
it pops out a lot. But it's not something that you could. It's not like jag where you're going to breed a jag and you're going to get some jags. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a based on that. Cool. I'll have to look it up and try to get better info on it so I can speak on it better.
From what I've seen, from what I've seen with the ball pythons, it seemed like it was a trait that was able to be bred, like it was a line of albino, that if you could link it back to the Paradox line, you got Paradox babies. So,
really? Huh.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know. I'm just going off of what I've been reading and what I understand it. It could be the chimera thing. It could be a line breeding. It could be something completely different. I have no idea. So, further research is needed.
Yes. I'll have to talk to Mr. Mutton and see what the case is.
Nick's just going to be like, Owen is a complete asshole, and he has no idea what he's talking about.
Speaking of Mr. Mutton, and I'll throw well, actually, it's now Dr. Julander, and Peter Birch. I got the Complete Children Python.
You
Complete
did
Children's
the
Python, the book in
now
the mail.
Now you need some Antaresia.
Oh man, I tell you what, some cool stuff in here, man. Some really, really cool stuff. Oh my!
The hell was that?
That was my dog. My dog does not like Zach. Zach must have exited the premises. I have to have a guard dog here at the facility. That way, I don't have my high-end snakes getting.
And now
off.
I'm going to tell the world that Eric has a long-haired dachshund. So if you really want to get around the guard dog, step over it.
Yo, it's vicious, man.
Oh yeah. She's terrifying with her bows in her hair.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. But anyway, yeah, the book came. I haven't been through it. Haven't read it through it yet completely, but it's definitely a cool book. It's basically laid out the same as the carpet python book.
Right.
Through the species, talks about the natural history, shows you some of the different locales and such. And there's a little segment where it talks about the New Guinea Antaresia. So that's pretty cool. What else do they got in there? Of course, they got the morph section and the breeding. I thought it was pretty neat that the they have this really cool picture in there that shows the different. It's got all these different headshots. It kind of goes through the kind of like the evolutionary history of Morelia. Kind of does the same thing for Antaresia, but it has all the different headshots of all the different types of Antaresia to show you the differences in the head scalation and such. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
What else does it have? Of course, it goes through breeding and all that kind of stuff and your normal keeping and everything there. I do like the – I guess it's much easier to do like studies with maternal incubation and all that kind of stuff since you can house so many of them in such a small space.
Mm-hmm.
So you're better able to experiment and such with it. But it's got a lot of data in there as far as, you know, like maternal incubation and all those different studies that were in the Complete Carpet Python. But, yeah, the guys have delivered again. And, of course, in the back of the book, goes into genetics. It talks about genetics, and then it shows some of the different morphs. I'm just looking at it now. It says, let's see. They have an albino, something called a black-eyed, caramel albino children's, caramel spotted python, caramel albino spotted python. They have this really cool one that's called an ebony.
Right.
That's really cool. And that's that's our buddy Damien Hyde.
Nice.
So that's his down there.
I know they have a ton more than in the morph department than we do have here. I mean, down in Australia. It's ridiculous compared to what we got.
I guess what I consider it similar to is it's kind of like the corn snake for Australia. You know what I mean? That's what it kind of looked
everybody
kind of
starts with
to
it.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caramel Ghost, that's a pretty cool one. The Granite, of course you know that one.
Yes, I do.
Yep, they're pretty cool.
And there's the pattern list that comes out of the Granite every once in a while.
You remember the Marble? That was a cool
yes.
one.
Yes, it was.
I like that
ridiculous.
One.
Ridiculous.
I'm trying to find the one that was...
Was it the Wheat Belt Stims?
Stimpsons, yeah.
Yeah, those are always good.
That's a locality, yep. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
The Pearl?
Mm-hmm.
I believe
yes.
they're in the States. I believe that.
I think there might be one or two. It's like it's one of those things. It's like, you know, it's out there. It might be out there. There's rumors of it being out there. It's like how all the rough scales and stuff happen. We
right.
hear they're here. We can't really talk about it. We don't know who the hell has it. Then all of a sudden, once babies start cropping up, now you know, aha, that person had it. So it's like how I'm going to be when I finally get those T-neg gold white lips.
Yeah, somebody had asked me that on the show. I can't believe we had, what's his name? Oh, my God, Robin on from Pro Exotics,
yes.
And we didn't ask him about those.
I said we're stupid.
What? Yeah. Yeah, he had them back in the day.
Oh, God.
Pro Exotics worked with them.
No, don't talk about it anymore.
And then he had them and then he died. Yeah, so.
Oh.
Sorry, Owen.
Oh.
I guess it's better that you didn't talk to him. But
yeah.
I think my favorite morph of the whole complex is probably the Platinum. That's probably
what makes you say the Platinum.
I don't know. It just has that contrast. It kind of reminds me of a carpet python.
See, so now what have we learned?
You know,
the only reason we get snakes is they kind of remind us of carpets.
Yeah. And then there's a sunburst Stimson eye, which that's pretty cool. I like that contrast. But yeah, definitely, it's a cool book. And if you are even interested, actually, even if you're not even thinking about getting a children's python, it's still cool if you're into pythons in general, because there's a lot of information in there.
Just also, I've been hearing that people are just getting the book because it's the next one in the series. Because they collect all the complete, they have the complete ball python, and then they have the complete carpet python, and all the other stuff. So the next one in the series would be the complete Antaresia. So they buy it just so they can have the set, because maybe one day they'll get into the Antaresia, and they want to have the literature to be prepared with.
Yeah, I think I have them all except for the complete boa, and I thought
you
about
you have the complete not, ball python.
Yeah, I had ball pythons
poor
back.
Shame.
Okay? Come on, man.
Okay. Nope.
It was, yeah.
Don't talk to him. You talk to me.
No, I don't want to say what he said. I can't say that.
No, you don't.
That would be mean. And I don't say mean things.
For one.
That's the only one that I don't have. But I really, really think it would be an interesting read. Because Vin Russo is kind of like the Nick Mutton of the boa world, and he knows a lot of stuff, man. So I think just to have that literature for the knowledge of learning about it. Boas are kind of like the carpet python of that world, you know what I mean? They kind of remind
right.
me, like, similar size, there's the localities, there's the morphs, there's all that kind of stuff going on.
Right.
So it's kind of similar. So
yeah, but I hope that we don't crash like the boa market.
Well, I think the only reason they crashed is because of the laws and all that were coming about. Otherwise, I think they would have stayed strong. There's a lot of cool. I was talking to.
Oh, there's a lot of cool boa morphs. I mean, red tails and stuff. There's tons out there.
Yeah, I don't know how different it is though. To breed, have you ever bred boas?
No, but my friend Andrew used to all the time. There's a whole lot of different to by means of the genetic wise. I mean, that's why some people kind of try to compare carpet python to boa constrictor by means of like albino is going to act like this and we'll get ghost this and ghost that. We need to compare ourselves to reticulated python. That is what makes more sense. That is how we'll be able to do what we can do with reticulated python. When it comes to boa, it could act completely different. You know, they are a different, completely different species. I mean, we're egg layers, they're live bears. So.
Yeah. I wonder what the difference is, like, as far as how you would have to be mindset-wise to, you know, to prepare yourself to work with something that if you're a python guy, you know what I mean?
Well, you need to understand, is that, and it's really funny, is that pregnancy can be hidden from us. But eventually the eggs are laid, and she won't lay the eggs until she's comfortable. Boas hide the pregnancy, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's just babies. So it was kind of funny because
surprise.
My friend was letting his boa cruise all around him, and then she pretty much just gave birth on top of him, like in his lap. And he says it's the grossest thing you could ever imagine. All of a sudden, boom, there's a bunch of fluid and baby boa constrictors. I'm like, oh, kind of gross. So it's like,
wow.
when it comes to my own stuff, I am so glad I have nice little wrapped eggs. I got an egg. I'm gonna put this in the incubator. So
I ca- kept red tails back in the day, but I never bred them or had any. Back then, I was more of a keeper rather than a breeder, you know. But I had about four of them. But they were cool, you know. Typical. I guess when you think of anything like that, that's kind of what comes to your snakes. It's either a cobra or a boa or something like that, you know.
It's either an albino berm, a boa constrictor, or something dangerous.
Yeah, but that's cool. Speaking of, I guess we'll go in. I'll give a little of. Story about what happened with my
segue into
Carmel girl. So, I think this season for me has been, I've learned a lot this season. I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that you have to feed females in order to get them to go. And I've also learned that you can look at a carpet, and even if you get it up to the size, if it's not of age, it's not going to go.
No.
And a lot of my
Yeah,
a lot of my collection, like for instance, my caramel head albino, zebra head albino, like I really put the food to them, and they're at the right size, but they're just not old enough. And my Xanic girl, same thing. You know, I tried, and I thought maybe I'd be able to get something out of it. But as soon as I started to, I don't know, I just didn't want to push them too much, you know, so I kind of backed off of it. So what I learned is that it's not necessarily about power feeding because that didn't work for me. If they're going to go, if they're of age and they're going to go, then they're going to go. To me, there's something that changes in their head. You would probably know this because you have a lot more adults than I do, Owen.
Right.
It seems like when a carpet becomes mature, their head changes. I remember Jason Balin telling me that a long time ago, but their head just changed. It just looks mature. And
I'll agree with you. Their heads get broader.
Yeah. They become cooler or something. I don't.
Yeah. Well, it's like, two of my females right now, I have my Hycon Tiger Pixie, and I have my Hycon female, straight Hycon female, Cassie. And they're both close to the same size. But Pixie's going to breed next year, Cassie will not. And Cassie has a much larger head and is filled out into her body. I'm sorry, Pixie has. Cassie is not. She's got a smaller head. And she's looks a little disproportionate. She's kind of got to grow into herself a little bit more. So she's going to wait for another year. But Pixie's going to breed next year. She's ready to go. She looks like an adult carpet python. She's one of the smaller females out of my collection, but she's ready to go. Cassie will probably wait till next year or the year after, even though, like I said, they're both close to the same length and thickness. But Cassie's just got a smaller head, so.
Yeah. Now, as far as, like, feeding and all that kind of stuff, I think that I think my approach, the year that I had success, I did sort of a cycle type of feed where starting right now, I really started to put the food to the girls that I thought were going to be of age. And started putting them to them. The closer I got, I backed off a little bit. And then maybe, you know, right after they came out of cooling down, I put the food to them again. Follicles grew. And then, boom, I had success.
See, but with my instinct, with what I do, they all get fed till, like, October. And then there's no food during winter. And then I don't feed when they come up. My girls don't eat when they come up. I don't even offer.
Well, here's what would have happened if I didn't have. What I noticed is that when I didn't think I was going to get anything, we started to get to the fact where they're warming up or whatever into that out of cycling and such, saw locks and all that, but I didn't see follicles growing. I started to feed smaller meals. I didn't feed large meals, like whatever they, let's say, for instance, they would eat a medium rat. I fed them a small rat, you know. If they had a large rat, I fed them a medium rat, you know. It's just kind of like a size down, a little bit smaller. And then all of a sudden, the follicles started to grow.
Right.
Now, it would lead me to the caramel girl. Me, I was talking to, you know, we go back and forth with the Terry Phillip method, and people disagree with it, agree with it, yada, yada, yada. I think, but the most important part of the whole Terry Phillip mindset, and I think most people would agree, even if you disagree with the theories that he has, is that you're trying to figure out what happened and why what happened happened wrong. You know, for instance, with the girl that was egg-bound with me, trying to figure out, well, why was she egg-bound? What happened that caused her to become egg-bound? There has to be a reason, you know, and maybe it's something that we might not be able to tell. Maybe she's just genetically just, you know,
predisposed to, like, be egg-bound. Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, could be a possibility. But more than likely, it's probably something that I did wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, keeper error type of thing.
Yeah,
and I think that...
I mean, Aurora was egg-bound when she died, and she'd given me two clutches the prior 2 years. So, you know, something happened there which couldn't be explained.
Right.
So.
And obviously, if the reason that we talked about ultrasound last week, obviously an ultrasound let us know exactly what's going on and when it's going on. Let me just think another one is... you know, after we talked to Robin last week, where he's getting ball pythons going all year long. I know chondro breeders, they have chondros go all year long. So what would be so different that carpet pythons wouldn't do it? Now, I think about, so I have an 08 girl that's just a coastal from, you know, and I've been trying to breed her for the past 3 years. Well, the first year, I thought maybe the, you know, she was too young, but she was the size.
Right.
So I'd give it a shot, nothing. So I just... you know, scratch it off as she was too young. Then this year that just passed, I tried to breed, or no, the year before I tried to breed her again, I got nothing. And then this past year I tried to breed her and I got nothing. So it seems to me that I'm missing the, I never would have thought to look at her outside of breeding time for breeding. Like I just, it seems stupid that if you're paying attention to what your snakes are doing, but I'm just not looking for those cues at that time. So it started me to get to think that now I'm going to pay more attention to her to see if maybe she starts to ovulate now. Maybe she starts, you know what I mean?
Which is what an ultrasound would be good for, is you ultrasound her every once in a while and then you just all of a sudden once you see follicles, get the male in there.
Right. Exactly. So, so anyway, the caramel female I had, I bred her with the zebra jag, and I had success with him last year. And she was a little bit on the smaller side, but she was still big when I went to her. She looks tiny now after all those eggs are gone. However, I noticed the
they always do.
Yeah, I noticed that. You know, she was really tight, whatever. And when she first laid, she had two eggs outside of her clutch. So one was obviously a tiny slug, like one of them little knob eggs looking things. And the other one was kind of like, you know, you could tell it was a slug. Pulled them out, candled them, tossed them in the trash. I noticed that there was one egg sticking out the back of her coil where it seemed like she couldn't get like a perfect wrap around them. So I figured, you know, she'll reposition herself, whatever, you know, because I was going to go maternal incubation. Now, this is what I would recommend to people that are going maternal incubation. And this is kind of, I don't know how you would check this other than because you, I guess if you go and you disturb the female, you take the chance of her not going back. But you just really have to, I guess, hopefully you catch her when she's laying or when she just laid.
Right.
But the following day, you know, it seemed like everything was great. She's maternally incubating it. I'm not worried about the egg sticking out. She'll wrap around again or whatever. Well, here it turns out that the reason that egg was sticking out is because she still had an egg inside of her. You could see it right at the base of her tail. So, you know, when I I came back around. I thought maybe she's still laying, what's going on? Well, here the following day, I found another egg that was one of those little knob eggs in the cage, and then that egg that was stuck. Then I looked at her, and obviously you have to get the egg out, and that you came over, you kind of got the egg out, which I'll let you walk through the steps that you did. But if I wouldn't have been looking at her and she didn't come up uncoiled, I could have missed it, and then she could have died.
Yeah. Yes.
Which wouldn't have been good. So.
Well, here's the thing is that, like, when you started texting me saying that she might have been bound up, it was one of those things where, if you think she might be bound up, chances are she is. And when I got over there, I was not expecting, first off, I had never seen the size of your snakes. I know we always talk that yours are smaller than mine, but I was not full on expecting the size of her. And it was blatantly obvious with the way she is and her girth that there were eggs in there. I mean, there was like no doubt about it. So, I remember us getting to the point where, that it's after a few days after they start laying is when it's crucial to get the eggs out. If you wait any longer, you run the risk of a prolapse. Also, you run the risk of a full binding and retention of the eggs, which is going to call for surgery. Of course, this is your Carmel girl, so we don't want to have her go do surgery, because otherwise you're going to have a very expensive pet. And that's a wonderful kicker, in the face. Right. So, luckily what we were able to do is move the eggs. They were still able to move, so all you got to do is just start pushing down like she's a tube of toothpaste and just slowly work the eggs down towards the vent. And hopefully the eggs come out right away from the uterus. Well, the problem is that we had with your girl is that they were still all intermixed and attached inside the uterus. So what we had to do was actually make a small cut in order to get everything out. So
Yes. Once
we had that small cut, which we made sure we didn't nick any veins or anything like that, we were able to get all the eggs out pretty quickly, and it was one good egg and two slugs, I believe.
Yes.
So, and those were able to get out of there, and luckily, once all that popped out, all her uterus went right back in, and there were no issues, and she was able to start cruising around, and then she bit me. So, which I love that. That's a great sign. She's pissed as hell. Okay. I understand, and great. So, and it could have been very, very dangerous when it comes to those kinds of things. And it all comes down to noticing and seeing what's going on. Like, you're completely correct. If she'd not come uncoiled, you could have just kept going and going and going and not realized that she was in trouble. And that probably would have led to surgery or possibly her death.
Right. Right, so, like I said, luckily we found it, and, she seems to be doing good now. I'm actually going to feed her tonight. I was going to feed her a small mouse, large mouse, whatever, but smaller than what she normally eats, just because I was a little bit worried with the, in case something happens prolapse-wise, I don't want to, but I would definitely want to get some nutrition in her and get her going again.
Right.
And that, but I don't see any blood. I've been looking for blood. I've been looking for prolapse. I've been looking for any kind of funky discharge or anything like that.
Right.
Looking at the tail to make sure that everything seems, okay. Like the cloaca isn't kind of like whacked out or weird or anything
like
that. Right. I don't see any swelling or anything like that. So as of right now, knock on wood, everything seems to be good.
Yeah. And if you were to get prolapse, really all you have to do is get some KY and a Q-tip and put it back in. And then hope to God it stays in. If it doesn't stay in, most vets will just kind of go and they'll throw one stitch into the vent and that'll keep everything inside and hopefully it stays up or up in there. But the problem is that most of the time when a prolapse happens, it happens again. So breeding her would be completely off. You would never be able to do that again.
Right. Where at that point she becomes a fancy pet.
Exactly. Which, you know, this is something you're going to have to worry about next year. Is she going to retain some eggs? Is she going to prolapse? What is she going to do? I think if you put some size on her between this year and next year, you're going to greatly diminish the risk of her having an issue.
Well, this would be one of those cases where next year I definitely, you know, I'm going to try to breed her again, obviously, because I want to see if she's okay. I'm going to definitely not, maternal incubation is going to be off with her. As soon as she would lay, I would pull her off the eggs. I would even venture to make sure that I would take her to, if I was unsure or even questioned, take her to a vet and maybe have them ultrasound her to make sure that there's no eggs in there, because I'm assuming next year she's going to have some more size. And this year it was, like you were saying, it was easy to say because she's still on the smaller side. But, you know, if she puts some size on her, like you were saying with your snakes, it's hard to tell because she's much, bigger than the eggs, you know what I mean?
Exactly. But which is a pitfall for one of my snakes, is I didn't know Aurora was fully impacted and bound until we were close to the point of no return. And despite my best efforts, we couldn't get her to turn around. So that is the pitfall when it comes to my guys, is if you don't know them, if you don't know your animals, it's very easy for them to hide things from you. And the only reason I caught Aurora is because whenever Aurora was pregnant, she would sit a little cockeyed. She wouldn't sit full basket belly up, but she would sit just a little cockeyed. And I caught her doing it, and that's when I got her to the vet, and we were just moving. So it's just the way it goes. Sometimes you catch it, sometimes you don't. Or by the time they let you see it, it's a little late. So.
Yeah, and obviously with dealing with live animals, obviously things are going to happen and stuff is, you know, you can't always predict how it's going to be because things just happen and that's just the way it goes. But, you know, so that was the experience and, you know, definitely a scary one to say the least. And the advantage that I had is that I, you know, living close to you and being able to come over, but I don't know how I would have fared if I was stuck in that position on my own. So,
you know, go to the vet, that's how you fare. But,
even still, like the knowing to be able to talk to somebody and take that initial step when you're to read it on a forum is one thing, reading in a book is one thing, but when you actually see it one-on-one, it's a whole different thing, which again is one of those I'm going to throw this cheap plug in there, but again is one of the good advantages to go into an event like Carpet Fest, because you know you could talk to somebody one-on-one about incidents like that and get their perspective, and it's a lot easier than doing it on the forum. And you know,
well, those instances are scary, and those things are really, you know, you can only learn by doing in some of those things, and you only get a chance to do it when something bad happens. So it's having somebody in your corner that is knowledgeable enough to show you how to do it. It's like when I first learned how to pop and probe snakes, I didn't want to read and just do it from a forum because I was so concerned I'd kill something. I was terrified I was going to hurt it. So, and having somebody show me, my buddy showed me how to prop and probe and do all that other stuff, I'm still shaky on the probing. Popping, I'll do every, you know, pop that thing out, there we go. So I did all that stuff, but the when it came to, you know, learning for the first time, I was quite nervous, but, you know, now you've seen me pop babies all over the place. So.
Yeah, I would agree. That was kind of something that I was scared to death of. And I know, back in 2009, I know Jason showed me at Hamburg one time how to do it. And it was kind of like, I know Luke showed me how to do it. But I don't know. It's not until you actually do it. I know when I was over there, you're like, give me that. You know, and I was like, well.
You're like, I don't want to hurt the zebra jag. I'm like, well, this was a boy. You're like, what have you done? I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah.
So.
So then once I seen that, I got more comfortable, and now definitely it's
well,
definitely.
My trick for popping is you do it the second they come out of the egg.
Yeah,
if
I was just
going to
say that.
If you do it immediately, they can't stop you. They like you just grab the little sucker if it's come right out of the egg, and it's like, hello world, and then just pop it. And then now you know if it's a boy or girl, and I have two bins. Boys go in one, girls go in the other. And then you just move from there. So this way, you know, you got the, you just got to keep their numbers with them, and usually nothing bad ever happens because everybody stays a boy and a girl. So.
Right. Now, here's something that, okay, so, you know, we have the experience, it's egg bound, we got the egg out, and, you know, we move on to the next step. I have the incubator ready to go. What I would recommend to people is definitely have that incubator up and running and dialed in. You don't want to do it at the last minute because of making sure that you have the temperature correct. I use the same thing as you, Owen. I use an old Pepsi fridge. I think this is the Coke fridge.
Mine is Coca-Cola.
Yeah. We can't even
complete
get
with
that.
The bottle as a handle.
Of course, we would have to be opposite. I mean, you know, it's
of course,
just like
I mean,
everything else. Light side, dark side,
yeah.
You know, Pepsi, Coke. You know, that's how it goes. I basically followed what your setup is. I have a fan in there. My fan is on the bottom because the fan that I have that's actually in the unit, I don't have it wired in. So I just put one of the fans, like a desk fan, on the bottom.
Yeah.
I have turned plugged into the thermostat, so when the heat kicks on, then the fan kicks on, and it just circulates the air. And that's pretty much how I have it set up. You know,
and they work great. I mean, if you have it plugged in, mine's run by a Ranco. I've seen them run by Herbst, a Johnson's Ranco system. Yeah, and that's what mine's run by. I've seen people use Herbstats because Herbstat 2 can have a probe for humidity and for temperature. I've seen people have Herbstat 4s running theirs, and they have probes on every single level. So it's just a way you can do it. I mean, there's a lot you can do with these things, but all you really need is something that can retain the heat and have air circulation, and, you know, the stat does the rest of the stuff. So having an old refrigerator is fantastic. I like having the glass door because then I can look in and be like, you know, hey, there's a head poking out. So it's
right.
Or I can be like, yep, everybody looks good, and then not have to open the incubator. So.
Now with you have the eggs in there and they're cooking, and actually, let me back up a second. Do you think that it is? Would it be something that's overkill as far as you're concerned with having a probe on every level?
A probe on every level is going to be kind of difficult. It's kind of overkill because you can't have a separate heat source for every level, so what's the point? I mean, you'll be able to know the temperatures on every single level, but you can't make the bottom level hotter without cooking the top level, so... Again, unless you have separate heat on every single level, it's really not going to do anything except tell you what the temps are.
Couldn't you actually wrap heat around instead of going, like, I think yours is set up the way mine is set up, where you're going just straight up and down? So if
you
went and put the heat around it, you know what I'm saying?
You could do that, but the problem is that it doesn't ramp up the heat. And if you had one continuous, say you had like a continuous heat tape that went down and around each level, like serpentine through each level. It's all plugged into one Herbstat, all plugged into one probe. Like, you know, and say the probe on the bottom says it's too cold, and it turns on the heat tape. But the probe on the top is, like, at perfect. Now all of a sudden that entire heat tape's on, and it's cooking the entire thing. You would need separate heat tapes for each level, which you could do. But, you know, that means four heat tape cords go into the four plugs of the stat with the four probes going each one. You could definitely do it. It's just going to be a very big hassle. A lot of cords.
Right. So I guess if you were doing that many clutches, that definitely might be something that you might be interested in. But if you're doing like, have you noticed a fluctuation between the top of your incubator and the bottom?
Not a major one. Like, The top of my incubator is 87.7, and I think the bottom of the incubator is 87.6.
Oh, okay.
So it's,
and that's
kind
of
not anything major.
That's kind of why you want the fan in there, because you want to circulate the heat around so it's more even.
Right. Also, my heat tape in the back, I measured incorrectly because I'm stupid. It goes in the back, but it doesn't stop at the base. It actually goes and runs along the bottom of the incubator to the front. So the bottom shelf actually gets heat from below and from the back. So.
Oh, okay. And you found that gives you the more even heat then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So because obviously you're going down towards the bottom. Do you fill your incubator top to bottom?
No. I would love to. We were going to try to this year, but we didn't get it. I mean,
right.
Think about it this way. Sophie, my 52-egg-laying monster, gave me one good egg.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of pissed about that.
Wow.
So, and we're still waiting on one clutch to be laid. That's the red. That's my red tiger, Alessa.
Uh-huh.
And she was bred to my red tiger, Orion. So we'll see how that goes. But she's looking huge. But she's not going into a shed. So I'm like, all right, I know you're gravid. You know you're gravid. Why don't you go into a shed? Shed out, and then pop out some eggs, and we can be done with this nonsense. But instead, she just stares at me and going, nah, I'm good. So,
wow.
I'm not quite ready yet. I'm like, no, stop it. So I'm going to end up having eggs again in, like, July, and I'm going to end up having babies again in September, which totally ruined my entire year.
Yeah.
Because
then you're just gearing in to start the season again. Wow, that's crazy.
I know, and then, like, you're trying to – I had such problems feeding my panel clutch. I think it's because – They hatched in September. So it was like, quickly feed. They're like, but the weather's getting cold. I'm like, no, you need to eat. So it's a lot easier to start babies in the summer, I think. But, you know, I had such problems with that clutch getting them going. Just, I think, because they were just hatched out so late.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah.
Good thought.
So, no more eggs in July, please.
So, as far as you mentioned humidity, what are you doing to keep the humidity? I think this is where people get confused. I know at least I did when I first was reading about incubation and egg boxes and incubators and all that kind of stuff. You want the egg box to have the humidity. The unit
right.
itself, the incubator, is more to hold
too
the
dry.
Heat. Right.
Yeah.
So
my first incubator was a chicken incubator, and it had a reservoir for water to disperse humidity through the incubator. That really didn't help. I mean, because normally with a chicken incubator, you have the shells and the chicken eggs aren't in a box on a shelf. They're just kind of there. So
right.
Having that was kind of difficult. So when it came to having my snake eggs in there, it really didn't matter what the humidity was outside the egg boxes. With my current setup, I mixed the water with the perlite, and that's the incubation thing. And I add water as needed. I rarely ever actually go and have to add water. I mean, the eggs themselves will show you what you need. If they start denting prematurely, add a little bit of water, they plump back up again. A lot of times there's really no issues with that first initial mix. Put it in there, let them go. And I always know the eggs are going to hatch in the next day or two if I start seeing condensation on the inside of the box. Because babies in the eggs start giving off massive amounts of heat and all of a sudden just get droplets all over the inside of the egg, and you're pretty much a day or two away.
Okay, so what about the whole idea that you can't get the eggs wet?
Well, you don't want to dump water immediately on the eggs. So don't ever touch the eggs with wet, but you can get them a little wet. Because one of the tricks I have for if you start getting mold on your eggs is you take a Q-tip with Listerine on it, and you just kind of dab around the mold, and it kills all the mold. and it goes away for a bit. It will come back, but you just kind of got to do that every once in a while, and it keeps killing away the mold. But so you can't get the eggs wet. You can't soak them. Don't dump water on the eggs. When I say add water, you can either move the tray that the eggs are in or pour it in a corner. I like to keep the corners. I like to keep the eggs away from the sides of the box. So I can pour water into the egg box without getting the eggs wet. If you're one of those people that puts the eggs into the substrate, move the eggs, add the water, put the egg back, something like that. You don't necessarily have to get them. Don't ever get them wet. You're completely correct. So.
Okay. The let me ask you this. As far as are you putting the egg, what is that called? That lighting stuff, the stuff you put up for lighting that everybody uses is kind of like a platform, or are you putting it straight in the substrate?
I am putting it on top of the substrate. I basically put the substrate in, try to make it as flat as I can, and I put that plastic crate right on top. And then the eggs go on top of the plastic crate. I know some people use, like, little cut-up Solo cups to prop up the crate.
Yep.
Above the substrate, things like that. What I found is that if you give the babies any kind of a gap to go into, they will. And sometimes babies do find their way into the substrate, and that's never a good thing. Jason Balin had told me once that he had one go into the egg box, into the substrate, and die. And
really?
That's definitely something you want to avoid. I've had babies go underneath the crate before, too, but all they do is just kind of sit on top of the substrate. They don't ever kind of burrow in, thank God. And then I've had babies escape the egg box after hatching and go up into the fan of the incubator.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm like, and it goes up into the fan. And this was the two baby jags somehow got out of the egg box and crawled up into the fan of the incubator, which was still going on, which still turned on every once in a while whenever the heat would turn on. So they managed to climb up and time it so they got up in there without getting their heads lopped off. And then they coiled up and fell asleep up there in the fan. And they're just kind of hanging out, and I, of course, couldn't find them. I finally unscrewed the fan cover off, and two little babies come dropping out. And I'm like, you little bastards, how did you not die? So,
wow.
Yeah. And then there were some zebra jags that got loose, or I thought got loose, and I tore apart my entire room because I didn't want to call my friend and say, dude, you know those zebra jags? Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah,
so
they're not here anymore.
I found out that they kind of just crawled into a light fixture that wasn't being used in their enclosure and kind of hung out there.
That's awesome.
Little bastards. Give me a goddamn heart attack. You want to have that light fixture after I found them?
What?
He got ripped the hell out.
Threw it in the trash.
I found them. I put them in someplace safe, and then I gutted the goddamn light fixture. It's now just a hollow thing that, like, a snake could go into. It looks like a little cup that used to hold a socket, but now it's gone. It's just a plastic cup that sits on the top of the cage. And there's nothing. The snakes can't go up there. Can't do anything with it. It's just there. But yeah, it ripped the hell out of that thing. You kidding me? No. So
now, what about putting holes in the box? Is that a mandatory thing, or is that something that doesn't matter?
You want ventilation regardless. I mean, I like to put small holes all the way around, and the heat of the incubator is definitely going to help it out, especially with the – and it's not going to lose too much humidity with all the air holes around. But you do want an air exchange, and also you want the egg boxes not to get too hot. When the babies start getting really, really close to hatching, they actually give off a lot of heat, which is why you get the condensation around the top and sides of the box. And some other species, when that happens, they've been known to cook themselves inside the box.
Right.
That's why you get a lot of late-term death when it comes to monitor lizards and certain other things, because people peck. six or seven eggs into a box and not realize that when it comes really time for those things to start hatching, all those eggs give off heat, and then all of a sudden that box temporizes into the 90s, and it cooks the babies. So.
So temperature-wise, you're looking at what, 87, you said?
87.7 is what I use, and that usually gives me a nice even split of boys and girls. It is, like with all reptiles, in my opinion, sex is based on temperature. And I believe higher gives you more girls and lower gives you boys. So 87 kind of gives you a fair split.
Okay. How many days incubation at 87?
2 months.
2 months.
Give or take.
Okay.
Give or take. I say 2 months is a good pinpoint. I mean, like I had the super caramels in there due June 1st. They'll probably show up at the end of, holy crap, we're in May.
Yes.
All right, well, this is going to be bad. So, when am I going away and won't be here? Right, Carpet Fest. Okay, that's when they'll hatch.
Nice.
Because that's how karma works. Anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so you do that, and I mean, I've had eggs hatch at 50-something, 50 and change, and usually they come out pretty quick. I like to be around when they're hatching. I will go to work and then come home and be like, who came out of their eggs today? I mean, it does take them a considerable amount of time to come out of their eggs, and I don't ever want to rush it. I know with certain species, like reticulated pythons, it's actually recommended that you cut them out of the egg because they could drown. Carpet pythons seem a lot smarter than that, and they don't tend to die. So.
Huh. They could really drown? That's crazy. I never heard that.
Yeah, I've heard several retic breeders have told me that a few times they've had a baby pip the egg, come halfway out, go all the way back in, and then drown. It's like, really? Really?
Wow.
You experienced the world and then died.
That sucks.
You chose death. So, it's one of those things. You see, like, you ever watch the movies with prehistoric pet when they're showing off their retic babies? They'll take the entire top off the egg.
Yeah, I saw that guy handle. Yeah, he just kind of goes to it, man.
Yeah.
He just kind of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first time I saw that, I'm like, dear God, he's like chainsawing the babies out of the egg. That's ridiculous. And then through talking with the retic breeders, like, no, you have to do that. I'm like, oh. I still feel really weird about it.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
cool.
You're going to hatch now. But normally what I'll do is after a baby has started, once one baby pips, I will take a small surgical scissors and just kind of snip each egg, give it a little V-shaped window, and this way the baby's got a nice way to get out. And I can also inspect to make sure every baby is okay. If there's any baby that is in distress or I can tell is immediately needs to come out of the egg, I can do that. Also gives you great time to get the twin shots because they'll both put their heads out the little hole you made. Like, yay, twins. So,
right. Holy smokes, not to cut you off, Owen, but go ahead.
No, we're good. Holy smokes, we have a what?
We have a caller.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, let's see who this is. Caller with the 978 area code, you had a question?
Hello?
A comment? Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right.
I'm doing pretty good. I'm Jack, by the way. And I just had a question about, you know, this is about python eggs I saw, and it just sort of caught my glance. I actually do have a couple python eggs, and there's one aspect I'm sort of unsure on. Do you think you can just, you know, answer my question?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, basically what happens is I have the eggs, but I really want scrambled eggs. So can I just break them open and use it for an omelet?
Do it. Wait, what kind of python? What kind of python eggs?
Well, the ones I picked up at the grocery market, it says full-range organic.
Python eggs? Oh, all right.
I think they have pythons in them. They're sort of speckled.
I'd say go for it. Oh, okay. I'd say go for it.
But what I'm worried about is, like, what if it's like Jurassic Park, where that the big dinosaur came after, like, the guy who ate her little dinosaurs?
Well, what I've seen is that, and the guys at Snake Bites did cook some corn snake eggs. I think you're good to go.
Okay, so, but I'm just wondering, should I buy a shotgun in case the big snake comes after me?
If you don't have a shotgun at this point and you're messing around with snake eggs, you're so far behind, it's ridiculous.
Well, you see, I thought I could get by with just a SMG. That's my line of thought.
No.
Okay.
Bigger snakes, bigger guns. You have an SMG, it's only good for putting down ball pythons.
And if I, like, just took a grenade and shoved it in the mouth, would that work too?
Good enough.
Okay. Thank you for your help, man. This is really helpful.
You're welcome.
Okay. I don't know
either.
I don't know.
I'm just going to roll with it. I'm pretty sure we're about to get, like, a text message from somebody going, "Hey, that was me." It's like, oh, okay.
You did pretty good, man. For a minute there, when the guy was talking, he's going with it, being serious. I'm like, oh my god, I'm trying to text you, like, hey, man, he's just kind of kidding around, man. You're like, yep, go for it. Is it python eggs?
Well, I'm just gonna get, well, at this point, here's the thing. When I used to work for the zoo, they would ask me stupid questions like that too, and I would just roll with it, because nothing beats a person more than when you roll with what they want, what they're saying, because then they don't know what to do. It's like, you know, it's like, would the tiger eat somebody? Yep, ate three people this morning. Next question. I mean, like, you know, they're like, duh. It really kind of stops them dead in their tracks if you just kind of, if we're going to play, okay, we'll play. It's cool. I'm all right with this. Let's have some fun. I mean, I will say the most, like, you've been in the room, I've said some of the most devastating things to people that's just like, yeah, okay, it happened, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I just got a message. Mo said, his name is Jack. His last name is Ass.
Thank you, Mo.
So there you go. Oh, so anyway. I can't remember what we were talking about now. That's crazy. we were talking about, so I'll just tell you how I set mine up real quick, because I'm kind of new to this whole incubation thing. I kind of just did the water in the bottom of the tub method.
Right.
I just put the egg grate up. I put them on the three cups, and it's kind of like, you know, it has a platform there. I just kind of sit there up on the top. Seems like the water's, you know, I haven't really had to. I had to fill it a little bit once, only because I was, I don't know, just a little, being a little anal about it. But probably more than likely, I could have let it go a little more. I did have a question though. I was going to ask you, mold. You were saying about the Listerine, but when do you know the egg is good, or when do you know it's bad? What's your thoughts on that?
The color of the mold. Now, you should know that first off, there's so many signs when it comes to if an egg's going bad. If you start seeing denting with a lot of mold, it's a good thing just to automatically say that this thing is starting to go downhill. If the mold is blue and the egg starts changing colors, like you start seeing it really sweat through the shell and really start changing really bad colors, you're looking at something that's probably going to go bad. Of course, we never throw out an egg until it is starting to smell or until it's beyond the, okay, this is clearly done. Because I've had weak points in shells before where you can actually see inside the egg. And one egg I actually had that was more weak point than it was actual good shell. And that egg still hatched, and that baby looked gorgeous. So don't ever throw an egg at just because it's hideous.
Right.
Until it really starts to smell and gets really kind of crabby looking. So.
Okay. Now, are you candling the eggs as you're going through, or?
I will, but I'll candle first and foremost just to get the. I'll candle first just to get the see the veins, because now you know you get the veins, and now you know you're cooking. Now you know you're working in the right direction. I'll usually wait a couple weeks before you candle again because you want to see more veins developing. You want to see a nice bright red color. And then the best part is when you candle when you're probably about a week or two out because then you start seeing the actual snakes moving in the egg. They do respond to the light when you candle. They'll kind of twitch and move and kind of jerk around, and that is my favorite part because now you know you got it. My first experience with candling monitor eggs was actually a little bit ago with my friend Andrew's Justinicus monitor, mangrove monitors. His eggs are right here incubating too, and candling them is completely different because right now his monitors have been cooking. They have an incubation of his eggs were laid in January, and they're not due till June 1st. So imagine having
wow.
that long of an incubation. Yeah, I'd go crazy. But we candled them last week, and you could actually see the skull, fully formed head, arms, legs kind of cooking in there, and it's like, wow.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
You can see the baby, and you can see a lot of it. So there's not a lot of room in the egg that isn't kind of consumed by baby. So.
Right. That's cool.
Yep.
I've seen actually last year I hatched out a couple of carpets from eggs that were pretty moldy. Not mold like, you know, fuzz growing on it or anything like that, but they didn't look pretty at all. So
right.
I just kind of leave it in there, and I just kind of went with it, and, you know.
I like to use Listerine. It's kind of a nice thing to keep the mold under control, especially because you don't want the mold to run rampant because it can get into the egg and into the shell and kill a baby. So just some Listerine and a Q-tip, and it does great.
Huh. Now, have you noticed that the mold will spread from the other eggs if that one egg goes good? Egg goes bad?
Oh, it can just because that's how mold works. I mean, it'll spread to wherever it needs to go. Mold grows. But, if it will jump from a bad egg to a good egg, it could certainly happen that way. You can have a whole clutch go moldy if you're not watching. So,
right.
I usually like to check on them every day, just give them a little look. And then, you can pop open the box every once in a while and just give them a check out. So.
Yeah, that's what I've been kind of doing because this is my first time that I'm artificially incubating. So I'm kind of I'm actually more anal about the artificial than I am about the maternal.
Right, because you assume that the maternal mom's going to check it out.
Yeah.
Artificial, you got to play mama.
Yeah.
So. Now, remember, your theory is that you're going to have to curl up with the eggs and kind of, talk nice to them, otherwise they're not going to come out eating as well as your other ones.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to have to vibrate on them and,
squish
on
them. The eggs.
Yeah, it's true.
Tell them, when you see a rat pup, that's food.
You must eat.
Eat that food. Eat is good. Food is good.
I think I'm just going to put headphones over top of the incubator box.
Mozart,
you know what I mean?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
See, now, if that is a problem, because I listen to music when I'm cleaning my snakes, and it is not Mozart. So.
No wonder your snakes are mean.
I love it because somebody came over the second after I, leased their Listerine one of the eggs. So they opened up the egg box. They're like, why is it minty? I'm like, hey. Hey, those are trade secrets. I don't discuss that with people. And,
Minty fresh.
Miracle Grow, that's how they get so big. Yes, that's it.
Nice. That's kind of how I have it set up. That's kind of how I'm rolling with it. And
you're right on par with everything. And, I mean, it's setting up egg boxes is so easy. It's ridiculous. Like, the first year I was like, I'm going to do a perfect 1-to-1 ratio of perlite to water, and we're going to mix again this and mix again that. And now this year, I'm just like, is it kind of like wet sand good enough?
I guess it's just like anything else is once you've done it enough times, it becomes sort of like second nature type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's cool. What I did, I'll just give some people out there from the maternal incubation point of view is when last year when I had the clutch and I was maternal incubating, As soon as I came to like day 50, I think it was 55 that the eggs hatched. I'd have to look that up, but I'm almost positive it was in the 50s, because I remember thinking, man, they should be hatching by now. But I guess with the maternal and the temp being, you know, not as high, I guess, maybe. But it took a little longer. But as soon as I saw the one pop out of the egg, I kind of pulled the female off, took her aside, took the eggs out. I put moist paper towels in the bottom. I cut the rest of the eggs. I kind of stuck them in the rack.
Right.
Just let them hatch out as they're coming through. And the one thing that this is actually kind of interesting, but I don't know if you saw that post over on Morelia Pythons, but Derek Roddy posted up that he had taken the eggs away from the female, and he put golf balls in there, and she maternally incubated the golf balls. And she actually left on day 51 or 2 or whatever it was. She left the egg. It's just kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy. I mean, like, what's funny thing is, one of my favorite stories is I pulled Aurora off her last clutch, and I pulled them off and put them in the incubator, and then we went through the incubation and the eggs hatched, and I was trying to get all the eggs into the rack, and I was, you know, popping babies, putting them away. And I mean, after the babies hatch, I'll pull them out of the egg box, I'll pop them, and then just like you, I have two boxes, boys and girls, and it's lined with wet paper towel, and you put them in there and you let them just hang out. They chill, they'll do whatever. And they'll usually stay in there for a couple of days, and then I'll worry about separating them once they start to get a little bit bigger and start having their, like, second sheds, their first sheds and things like that. But I took all the eggshells, and I chucked them on top of Aurora's cage. I just put them there because she was the top cage in that stack, and it was kind of like chest level, so I just threw them all in there. And I come back later, and Aurora has balled up all the newspaper in her enclosure, and she's incubating it.
Wow.
It's like, really? The smell of the eggs that are close to you are just going to incubate whatever the hell is near you? It's like, oh, what the hell? So, it's whatever.
So one of the...
I had to do the whole process of, I had to throw the eggshells away, I had to pull her out of the cage, I had to bleach her cage, I had to wipe her down.
Right.
So...
Yeah, that's what I was going to get into, is that that's kind of an important step, because if you don't do that, then the mom seems to think that the eggs are still there. She might not go start eating, and, you know, so you have to take her out, clean her off, and get that cage all scrubbed down and brand new so that she...
Which is funny, because Sophie slugged out this year, and I didn't clean her because I wanted to see what would happen, and... She did not act like she was trying to protect the clutch. She didn't try to incubate anything. She went right back on food. So it's almost like she knew that the clutch was duds.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah, I think they know. They know, man. That's why I go by the whole maternal incubation thing. But I did learn my lesson from last year. Maternal incubation doesn't always work out the way that you want it to work out, so you have to have the backup plan in place. So you definitely should have an incubator up and running, and you can do it pretty cheaply. You know, you don't have to have a state-of-the-art unit, because the one that Animal Plastic has is that's pretty nice, man. I saw that out of the park. That's like top notch right there. When I do have a compound,
very nice.
That will be one of the units here. But so, yeah, I kind of do what you do. You know, setting up the babies, I just kind of let them come out of their eggs. I sex them right out of the thing. I put them in the tub. You know, I kind of just, like, wait till they do their first shed, and then before I even think of feeding them or anything like that.
No, there's no point.
Yeah, I just kind of set them up in the box, you know, paper towel. little deli cup. I don't use a perch because what I found is I use the 16-ounce deli cups. I used to use a smaller one, but I used the 16-ounce, and they just kind of perch right on the lid of the cup. And then for a hide, for a simple hide, something that's disposable and easy to use, I just kind of use a paper towel roll, you know, like the empty roll after all the paper towels are gone. I cut them up to size. I throw them in there, and I let them do their thing. And I just kind of let them be. And then after they shed, you know, that's when I start to try to feed. I did notice, I do weigh them also out of the egg just to get an idea of what they were. Last year I did notice that the ones that were maternally incubated were weighed more than the ones that were artificially incubated. But with only three clutches, I can't really, you know, that's not really,
really gauge it. Right?
Yeah, I can't gauge it by that. So
right.
Well, when I start to have more and more clutches and all that kind of stuff, I'll be able to dial into
figure
that a lot more. So,
which you're right, it kind of makes sense that way. But you know, doing the artificial has been working for us. So,
yeah, absolutely.
And you're absolutely correct with having, you know, if I had had all the clutches that we intended to have this year, we would not have had any room for, we wouldn't have had all the room for the babies in the incubator. So we would have had to do some maternal incubation, but it's good to have the backup plan. Always have the backup plan. You never know when you're going to need it, even if it's your backup plan is having a spare Maclox python to bribe a friend of yours to. You know.
Hey, man, that's what they're good for.
Oh yeah, and you know, every time I look at him, I'm like, God damn it! The problem is that I like him too much. So
that's right. He's a cool snake. I actually seen him now that he's all grown up. So yeah.
And, yeah, we're try to get some Max next year. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it should be. I'd be interested to see if how much different they are from carpets. From what I've heard, they're pretty much the same. I mean, it's kind of like pretty much the same husbandry.
We shall see, because it's like I'm gonna try to breed you guys, but I'm gonna treat you like carpet python. Either you're gonna breed, or I'm gonna be like, well, try something different next year. So
yeah, I think you might have more difficulty with the white lips than you would with the
you have
backlash.
No idea. I mean, with the white lips, the golds are just something that, like, we moved our gold project over here with me, so I can tinker with them. And we're keeping the blacks over with Chris, and the blacks are notoriously harder than the gold faces. But if we can hammer out the golds, I think it's only a matter of time for the blacks. Of course, next year is when, or the next season is when we're going to try the black faces, and we have a captive bred male, so that might be a factor. There's a lot of factors to go into these guys, so we will see.
Right.
Those
and then
I can't wait for.
And then the now we got another caller, but I'm afraid to click on it.
Oh God!
Here we go. You ready, Owen? Okay.
I'm ready. I'm always ready. You kidding me?
Okay.
Bring it.
Caller with the 336 area code. You got a question or a comment?
Yeah. Hey, guys. It's not a hoax call, so you don't have to worry about that one.
I can calm down.
Jesus, right. What was that? I was, like, listening. I was like, what the hell's going on over there?
Please, I got to flex my I'm an asshole too method.
I love how you just, like, went with it and just, like, let it just roll and just, like, let it ride.
Because,
I mean, it sounded serious at first, and then he was being wicked serious. So it was just like, I didn't know what y'all were going to do with it. I was just like, is somebody going to call this out, or what's going to go on? I had one comment, though, on sex on snakes isn't determined by temperature at all.
Okay.
Just letting you know, they're like birds. They have, I think it's a W and a V or something. I can't remember which is the...
Two, it's a WWZZ.
That'd be like our X chromosome or whatever. So that stuff is going to sort like independently and stuff like that, and they're going to, like, the homologs will separate during meiosis and whatnot. So, yeah, do you find that you get more females when you raise the temperature? Because that'd be interesting to see, like, if, like, it may be true for some species, you know?
I mean, I've had an even split for my temps. I'm basically going on the basis of, you know, I've seen the kind of stuff happen with alligators as well as monitors and other kinds of reptiles. I've never really toyed with my temps, but it would be something fun to do.
I wouldn't touch those temperatures if you paid me. But
exactly, I'm way too terrified to destroy my entire
course. I do artificial, so
yeah.
I actually do the no substrate method. I know you guys are doing what, vermiculite and water. Is that what you guys do? Or perlite, rather.
I do no substrate. I don't have a substrate.
Oh, you do no substrate?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I like to run. And I know this is like the fancy smancy like version of Listerine, but I use chlorhexidine gluconate. I don't know if you guys have ever bought that or used that on your cages. It's great antiseptic, and it's totally safe. And I just use a Q-tip and use a watered-down, you know, version of that for when I get the mold and stuff like that on the eggs. I had a little bit of mold on two of my eggs this year, but I've hatched out a couple of clutches now, green trees, successfully. I got 16 babies sitting there, happy and healthy. I got 9 reds and 7 yellows this year, so...
Oh, cool.
Awesome. One that was from a really nasty looking egg, like half of it was probably like dark and crusty, and it came out like all skin folded up and died almost instantly. So there were 17, but that one passed it, like, immediately. But overall, it had a pretty good year.
Yeah. Cool. If every hatchling we ever had all survived, we'd have way too many snakes.
I had enough problems last year, my first year breeding green tree pythons, that I don't think I'll have any problems here on out because I ended up having to hack the head off of a female, and she got egg-bound and had 27 eggs inside of her, and just wouldn't drink from the water bowl, wouldn't drink from her coils, just was always dehydrated, and I was kept on having to just throw her in baths and stuff to get her to drink, and there was points where I was having to, like, force water down her, and she got real bad off, so she ended up not being able to even be saved, so I ended up losing all those, that whole clutch, because it remained inside her for too long, and they all just stayed wet, you know. So I learned from that one, and then I don't know. I messed with my first clutch that was the female that bred for me this year. I messed with the babies, and I pipped them all when the first one pipped because I didn't want them to die inside the eggs, you know? I'm thinking, like, because I had a buddy of mine say, oh, you know, I had some die because I couldn't even get out of the egg, you know, so I wish I had pipped them a little earlier. But I'm thinking, like, once the first one pips, I'm pipping them all, you know?
Right.
Like, I didn't think about the fact that, oh, the egg's going to dry up and yolk is going to dry up and they're not going to have the nutrients they need to even, like, survive the next couple of days until they get a meal or next couple of weeks or whatever. So I ended up having probably 8 die on me just like that, just probably within a week. Just they were dropping like flies. It was like it was like a funeral rather than a birth, you know. It was a real bad year, especially losing that one female and that whole clutch going bad, and and I've got some survivors from that clutch, and I've sold a few, but yeah, I definitely learned from last year, and this year I had a much better success, and I just kind of left them all alone and, you know, let them do their thing. Once most of them had pipped, I pipped the last, I think, four, and then I had, you know, 16 out of 17. They're all doing great, and most of them are feeding, and yeah, we're well on our way here.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good info for me, because I pip all my carpet eggs after the first one pips, and now if I ever get chondro eggs, I'm not going to do that. So.
Yeah, don't do it. I think what happened was I was still running the incubator, but somehow it lost, like, it desiccated, like, the eggs, so it, like, they weren't able to absorb the yolk, and they were, I mean, they were literally looked healthy as hell and came right out of the eggs and would just die. Like, I had a couple just come out of the egg and die, or the next day they would die, and it was just, it was awful. It was the most awful several days, like, in a row. And then I had a prolapsing issue probably, you know, after they were about 4 months old, and I went through issues with, like probably half of the babies that had survived were prolapsing on me. And it was just, it was just no good. So I've got a couple that are just held back that I'll probably never sell just because they prolapsed on me, and I don't want to sell those animals. So, yeah.
Yeah, I understand that one.
And I don't really want to breed them either. I don't know if that's a genetic issue or if it was environmental. I tried changing my water, you know. I tried several things.
I've had it.
Do you
like,
have any ideas?
We have it with our Malukans, our scrub pythons. They've prolapsed, but the second they prolapse, you run a very high risk of them prolapsing again, especially if they're a female when it comes to breeding. And after a certain amount of time, if it keeps prolapsing, you always keep shoving it back in. But eventually there's going to be a point where you can't get it back in, or it prolapses and you're gone.
Are you talking
like
about adults prolapsing or...
We've had juvies. I've had juveniles prolapse.
Yeah.
And we had several Malukans, and we had one of our youngest boys prolapse, and we managed to get him all fixed up, everything back in, and he was able to eat and defecate without prolapsing. But as far as us using him for a breeder, we didn't want to run the risk. So
I agree.
We passed him off to a friend of ours who just wanted him as a pet, not as a
And
breeder.
That's what I'll do, you know. I'll just, you know, probably sell them for a reduced rate and just sell them as a pet. Get them to the point where they're not prolapsing, obviously.
Right.
I have one that was the strongest of the batch, and I tried to switch him over from one pinky to two pinkies, but he was getting so big that I just didn't think it would be a problem, and he just, like, prolapsed on me after probably the third time I had fed him two pinkies in a sitting. And I don't know, they just must have been bigger than average pinkies, or it might have been an environmental factor.
Prolapses are kind of hard to gauge that way.
They're really hard.
You never know which one's going to be. You never know which one's going to be the one.
There's so much talk about it for so many years, you know. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is. I know Greg Maxwell always thought it was, you know, the water, so that's where I went first, just because that's what I grew up with, was Greg Maxwell's word. So I started doing, like, reverse osmosis water and whatnot, but it didn't seem to have any effect, because once they start, it's hard to get them to stop.
Yeah, it's like chronic regurgitation in emerald tree boas. Once it starts, it's really kind of difficult to figure it out and get it to stop.
Really? I didn't realize I had an issue.
Emerald tree boas
caught ones, or they have an issue with their captive bred ones as well?
I think it's mostly with the wild caught, but I also think it's appeared in the captive, just because.
Okay.
But I don't know if I don't know if the captive.
Kind of like green tree pythons are a little more prone to prolapses.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be an affliction of green tree pythons, you know, especially.
Yeah,
I mean, I've had a couple other snakes do it. I had one ball adult do it. But other than that, there's no other snake that I've had prolapse. So. I've kept a pretty wide variety.
Also,
it was good talking to y'all. Probably ran up the clock a little bit, but
that's fine.
That's good.
Yeah, I love y'all's show, and I listen in every now and again when I get the opportunity and stuff. So, you guys keep going and keep having some guests, and get a Green Tree Python guy on here soon.
Oh, we've had tons.
I'm sure there's one in the works.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, probably. So, well, thanks for calling in and parting us with some Green Tree knowledge. Always good to get a dose.
Yeah, love y'all's show. Yeah, and if you would like a Green Tree Python, give me a call.
Buddy would never forgive me. So
here's a plug. Actually, I've been emailing Eric back and forth. You probably just not connecting the people, but we talked about trading anyway. So give me a call.
Yeah.
I've got a good clutch.
Cool.
They all look good this year, and the red ones, there's some especially dark ones that I think you might be interested in.
Cool. Awesome.
Very
will
awesome.
Do. Very good.
Well, thank you very much for calling in.
All right, man. Okay. Owen, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
I'm sorry, while you guys were talking, I was, Julie has the,
disappeared again. You disappeared on me. You're always leaving me.
No, I'm sorry. Julie has the auction items that she did. She put a link over at the Northeast Carpet Fest spot. So I'm just going to run down the list real quick of what we got.
Do it.
So we have it's put in two different categories. We have the premium items, which people can call in, bidders can call in if they want. And here we go. Right at the top of the list, we have 1.1 rough scale pythons donated by Bushmaster. So there you go. Man, they're nice, man.
Shut up.
Wow. We have a Zebra Jag male donated
okay.
by myself. Man, she
mm-hmm.
looks good. Or he looks good.
Now we don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, it's a boy. Inland Carpet, another awesome donation. Donated by Australian Addictions Reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds like I always say addictions, but it's addiction. Australian
yeah.
Addiction Reptiles. There you go. So they're the three premium items that you can call in and bid on.
Oh,
and,
I'm wounded. I'm not a
yeah.
premium item. Okay. All right. I see how this goes. Continue.
Well, I guess it has to do with the fact of where they come in. What did you donate?
We
all right.
Tom, female. We don't got to talk about it. Okay.
Okay.
Continue.
On-site.
I better be on that list somewhere, goddammit.
Oh, no, you must be present to bid on these items. So this
all
is,
right, go ahead.
You must
ahead.
Be present to bid on. We have a reverse trio of New Guinea IJ carpets, and that was donated by Finnegan's Exotic Collectibles. They're from
okay.
Anthony Caponetto. They're actually pretty cool. So I want to say it's a Jag and then two NGs. Oh, man, this female here is... Man, whew. It's a tiger carpet donated by
uh-huh.
Hesham, and it's a Caribbean tiger bred to a Ben Team Coastal Jag. So, man, that would look really nice with some citrus tigers.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we have donated by David Kelly. It is a Diamond Jungle Cross. Looks like this is a Python Pete. Diamond Cross to a Kerry King Jag. So there we go. Next we have a Coastal Brettle Carpet. That's a female, and that's donated by James Johnson.
Okay.
And next, Zach Baez, he donated a male Brettle Head Stripe. Owen, you donated a female coastal carpet python. No picture.
Carmel. Right? Carmel. It's a Carmel carpet, not a coastal.
Okay.
God.
Carmel coastal carpet python.
Jesus, fine. I'm just bringing a coastal now. Forget you guys. You guys lost the Carmel.
Oh,
couldn't
no.
figure that one out.
No, it says it. I read it wrong.
All right. Oh, then you screwed it up.
Yeah,
so,
I screwed it up.
All right. The picture is, I don't have a good camera, so I'll send Julie a picture, or I'll post it up as soon as I can, so.
Yeah, I guess you're going to have to send it to her, because this is her site that she's got linked in.
Yeah, yeah, I'll email Julie.
Next, we have a jungle carpet donated by Nathan Jameson. It's a line bread highlighter, and that's a male. Buddy donated a, don't know what year, don't know the sex, green tree python. So we're waiting for a picture of that. But
right. Obviously, I'm not the only one. Okay.
Australian Addiction Reptiles also donated a striped coastal carpet. Don't know the year, don't know the sex. And then there is 2013 Irian Jaya Jag Sib carpet pairs donated by Finnegan Exotic Collectibles. So there you go.
Okay.
There's the rundown so far of the stuff we have.
And that's not all of it because Howard's not on there.
Nope. Yeah, I'm sure there's still stuff to be added as we go down. So,
okay.
If you are interested in giving anything for the auction, for Rico, you can contact myself, you can contact Owen, or you can contact Julie. She goes by GFX Morelia over on Facebook. Yeah, it should be cool. Man, I just keep going back to those rough scales, man. I'm sorry.
Shut up. Shut up. All right.
Take it.
Bad enough, I'm going to have to compete with everybody there and then phone people.
Yeah, you're gonna have to deal with the phone people. So
I'm gonna be so pissed when I lose. I may cry. So when you're like, yeah, fine, good.
They
go home now.
Like they kind of look like if a carpet python, a chondro, and a tree boa all kind of mixed into one thing.
That's why I like them so much, dude. They're
I keep sticking.
Stop it. They're mine. You look at them fine when they're here.
I'll have them in my collection eventually, but
we know what. Yeah, I know. Paul Harris is like showing pictures of his, and I know where yours are coming from. So,
I'm looking at that inland and that tiger. They're nice, man. But anyway,
do you not have inland?
Yeah, this is the one.
You have inland, right?
Yeah, Alcross. Yeah, I have a pair of them. Nick Mutton.
Okay.
I got other things I got to pay for, so the inland's going to be out of my price range.
Yeah, you got to pay for the head hippopotamus or whatever else is coming now.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where we are with the.
No, we're gone. We have no idea.
So I guess we pretty much hit on everything we had. The only thing I wanted to hit on before we get off is we could have segued in into a couple times, but we kind of missed it with the call.
Right.
But that's fine. We always like call-ins, especially the ones that are the cranks. It always makes for a fun show.
Gives me something to do.
Yeah. When you handled it like a champ. This whole debate, now we got another debate going on, man. I can't take these debates anymore. I can't.
Me
people
either.
can't they just like all the carpet pythons and be done with
can't
it?
We all
what the
just
heck?
Get along.
Now we're debating on whether the red is better than the caramel.
Oh,
I don't know, man. Go ahead.
Well, in my opinion, the caramel hasn't really been. You know, we haven't messed around with the caramel enough to make that call. I mean, we're just starting to really unlock the potential of the caramel when it comes to, like, you know, looking at my caramels, which were some of the first ones, and your caramels, and then some of the newer caramels that have kind of come out.
through breeding, line breeding, selective breeding, whatever, it's, you know, you're on a completely different page, and we haven't really played with it that much. You know, super caramels are still fairly new, and they haven't really been added to too much. Once you start fiddling with those, you're going to get more and more, and it's going to kind of show what you could possibly get. Right
yeah.
now, I think the reds are a little bit better, but the reds have been around longer. And so give the caramels some time before we start making these choices.
Yeah, actually, most of the people say, actually, no, they're saying the reds, and then there's some people that are saying the caramels, and they're going back and forth on which is better. I kind of like them both, but I like them for different reasons.
Yeah.
I know that the caramel, you're absolutely right. If I was to go into my snake room right now, you would look at my caramels and you would look at my reds, and hands down, people would like the reds better than the caramels.
Right.
No doubt about it. But I think that you look at my caramel jag, that might run you... you know, and then I think about if it's a super caramel. Then I look at some of the stuff like Paul Harris and Nick Mutton have done.
The super caramel jags that they've got, and that's just the beginning. I mean, those, in my opinion, are what takes the cake there.
Yeah.
I mean, I know red jags are up there, and they look gorgeous, don't get me wrong. But the potential that's still being unlocked with the super caramel is what's going to make this, in the long run, the super caramel, I think, is going to maybe edge out the reds, or at least, you know, be on the same level as them.
See, yeah, I guess, but my whole thinking is that they're completely different, though. So, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if you're looking for a caramel, to me, you're looking for something that's more yellow. Looking for that kind of color.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to have red in there, but you're more, to me, at least with me, when I'm looking at a caramel, I'm looking at that yellow base color.
Right.
And it's not like a jungle yellow. It's like, it's almost like the Citrus Tiger type of yellow, but it's not like that bright neon yellow type of thing. With the caramel,
right.
with the reds, I mean, you're looking at something completely different. Like the red Jag V I have, that is almost like the base color is almost white. You know,
right? You're looking at the absence of color along with the highlights of the pattern.
Yeah,
so,
and the
you're
red
right. You are looking
like,
at something completely different.
Yeah, it's just they're different snakes. I don't think you can really compare the two, to be honest with you. I mean, the only reason they get compared is because they're red.
People compare the caramels with the reds is because baby caramels are born red.
Right.
And there's some people that saying that that's how caramels showed up. Just a kind of a split off of the reds, but you know, it very well could be, but it's something, it's a proven genetic morph. Otherwise, what are we doing with the super caramels? And looking at the super caramel jags compared to a red jag, they are completely different animals. I mean, if we were to sit down and have your Jag V next to one of Paul Harris's or Nick Mutton's super caramel jags, you're looking at two different animals completely. Looking at a bright yellow animal with these orangish like highlights with very little black on it compared to like a whitish pinkish animal with very little black on it with red highlights around the black. Both gorgeous animals, but completely different. So what people don't seem to, and they don't like to wait. I mean, it's like when you're telling people that this baby's going to be gorgeous if you give it a few years to grow. Right now, caramels are not at the same level as reds. So automatically everybody jumps to the reds. Give them a couple of years.
Yeah, speaking of a couple of years, you know, I've been working on these. There's a couple of people that have been doing it. Zach, Dave, and now there's a Dan, he's doing it too. These pedigrees, which is actually kind of cool because the thing I like about doing them is you can kind of see where the snakes have come, and you can see what traits have been passed down from parent to parent to parent, you know, to what you have now in front of you. I have some that go back to the founding stock of the original Jag, which is
original
cool.
Tiger, yeah.
The one thing I will say, and I've been saying this for a long time, but now I have the proof of it, is that, you know, the way that IJs look, I know you don't want to hear the IJ talk, but
I've already chewed you out, but continue.
Yeah, I know. The way the IJs look from two generations, almost two generations that I've seen, man, the refinement. I'm telling you, man. It's
you can see a vast improvement over 1 year. I mean, you've seen my Hi-Con Cassie, Cassiopeia?
Yes.
And comparing her with her father and mother, she's got brighter yellow and darker black than they do.
Yes.
And it's ridiculous. Like, I posted that picture up this week of her. It's ridiculous. She looks like a jungle. Like, I gave you over here the week ago or something like that after the show, and I handed her to you, and I said, check out this jungle. You're like, wow, what bloodline is it from? I'm like, here. And then, you know, it started clicking what the hell you had in your hands, and it's the ridiculous part of that. Just one generation, one combination can start yielding really good results.
Yeah. So, you know, for the carpets that don't get the love like the jungles get, you can see just in a couple of generations, and I'm telling you, man, the more refinement that's done, the more and more you're going to see.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're going to see it
we're
in the inland.
We're
going
to be so far away
rattle.
From wild-type carpets, it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be like, what is this brown thing? It's a wild Taringea. Oh, shit. What's this thing? Oh, it's a wild-type coastal. They're disgusting. I mean, it's the way it's going to be. We're going to think that the selectively bred is the wild type. It's like how when you start surprising people and show people what a jungle carpet looks like in the wild, they have no idea what the hell you're talking about. So.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Yep. I think the carpet complex will start to really get people's attention because it seems like I said, it's grown and growing. So there you go. I guess before we jump off, we have a couple minutes. We'll just run down the list. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on?
No, I think we're good. Just do the rundown.
Okay.
Then no one can go to bed.
There you go. I know you've been quite the co-host tonight, Owen. You bailed out of...
I earned my keep, did I?
You've informed us of all your egg duties. You saved my female from being egg-bound, and you warded off the crank calls. So good job, Anna.
Why wear a cape around places? Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Morelia Python forums. That's moreliapythons.com. Go over there, sign up, become a member. That is the Carpet Python website forum. Probably the best in the. What do you mean? Probably it is the best.
Probably
it's
I love how you did that web. Before I could. Yeah. Continue.
Now, I kind of did that on purpose, but
yeah, beating up our sponsor. All right, it's good. Yeah. Good for us. Good for business. Go ahead. So
go over there, check it out, become a member. Definitely the place to be. We are also proud to be sponsors of the ICAS. Like I said at the beginning, it is on August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Some of the speakers that are going to be speaking, Mr. Nick Mutton, he's going to be talking, and there's a couple other speakers there on some different subjects from arboreal snakes I think Nick's going to talk about Morelia and such, so looking forward to that. That's August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, and that is, if you want more information, you can go over to www.arborealsymposium.com, and you can get your ticket, and make sure you come out. It's going to be a little bit different from the normal reptile show. Than the normal reptile show, and as far as there's going to be talks, there's going to be food, and the show lasts from a long part of the day, and we can drink and hang out and have a good time. And it's 3 days.
It's good show. Oh yeah, I'm going to use all 3 days of it too.
Yeah. Don't forget Carpet Fest. We're weeks away. I'm going to throw over a link so everybody can go and check out the auction items. They all go for Rico Walder. If you have any interest in donating one, please contact us. I've been having problems with the Morelia Python Radio email, so probably best to email me at eric@ebmorelia.com if you want to get in contact me, or you can contact me over on Facebook under Eric Burke. But, yeah, Carpet Fest May 18th in Waldorf, Maryland, hosted by our good friend Howard Redding from Redding Reptile Breeders. It's going to be an awesome time. June 8th is the Northwest Carpet Fest, and that is also over on carpetfest.com for more info if you're interested in heading out there. Maybe you're in the middle of the U.S. and you can't decide on whether you want to go to the East Coast or the West Coast. I recommend the East Coast, but if you want to go to the West Coast, feel free. I think that's all I got. Go ahead, Owen.
All right, what we got is definitely go to rogue-reptiles.com. Check out all the latest happenings of Rogue and our show dates. You can also go to Rogue Reptiles at facebook.com. Like us over there, and that's where you're going to get the most up-to-date news on what we're going on here at Rogue. If you're interested in getting on the waiting list of some of our latest babies that are coming, we have Super Caramels coming in June, as well as original line tigers, and maybe some red tigers coming in July. Give us a call. We'll set you up on the wait list. And that is pretty much it. We have no upcoming shows except for the June 8th show in Hamburg, which we're going to be splitting a table with Eric of EB Morelia.
Yep.
There you go. So that'll
good
be
job.
A good show. Definitely come out to that one. Other than that, I got nothing else. So what we'll say is thank you for listening, and please stop on by next week for some more Morelia Python Radio.